We begin this evening with Iran. It has been in the news again over its disputed nuclear program this month. The International Atomic Energy Agency said it had, quote, credible information that Iran had carried out activities relevant to the development of a nuclear explosive device. Tehran has rejected the findings and insists its program is peaceful. The report has intensified the debate over Iran and could deepen its international isolation. Joining me now is Mohammad Javad Larijani. He is the head of Iran's Human Rights Council in the judiciary. He is also a close advisor to the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. I am pleased to have him back at this table. Welcome.
Thank you. Very glad to meet you.
I want to first talk about the nuclear issue. The IAEA says it has credible information gathered from Iranian documents and other sources, including Russian scientists, that suggest there is ongoing activities to develop an explosive device.
Well, as Iran explained before, the evidence that is cited by the agency is an old laptop gathering of different pieces, which none of them could be considered a document in the professional sense. And 4 years ago, it has been put to Iran by the agency, and Iran explained in detail. And it was considered by the agency an acceptable answer. But it is interesting that the whole thing, again, has been revived.
But they're saying these are new documents and there's new information here, not old information.
Well, information and documents, they have professional meaning in the agency's vocabulary. Anybody could pass on piece of information, but the agency should create documents. Countries can claim a lot of things against each other. No single document in the professional sense of the agency indicates that Iran is leading or was attempting to build a bomb. This is absolutely true.
But they read it differently. The IAEA reads it differently, and they say there is.
Well, in fact, the agency has plenty of difficult time to convince others that his argument is relevant. Well, suspicion is blown in this case, and a lot of interest. Well, let me get to the crux of the matter.
Okay.
United States of America, with a number of countries in Europe, they are spearheading a wave of hostility and pressure on Iran. They use any pretext here and there.
They make no question about that, that they are imposing sanctions as much as they can. They're trying to get other governments, including the Chinese government, to restrict their trade and commerce with Iran. That's a clear U.S. policy.
Well, I just wanted to make the point that as far as our nuclear energy program is concerned, nothing new is happening. This is the old and the ongoing thrive of Iran to develop its nuclear technology for variety of uses. None of them are military. Mm-hmm. It is open to the inspection. The agency already visited several times Iran. The cameras are there. This is one issue. The other issue, how to make it a vehicle of pressure on Iran, which is, unfortunately, is using these UN mm-hmm. mechanisms quite often.
Is it in your interest to convince the IAEA and the United Nations and the United States and other countries, including Russia and China, that you do not have a program?
Well, definitely. I mean, negative proofs are usually more difficult than positive proofs. Mm. Positive proofs, you just show that you have it. Mm. But negative proofs, it's impossible sometimes to tell them why you don't have it. In an interview, a gentleman asked me, why you are not opening all the country for the inspection? What it means for such a vast country? As a joke, I said, well, they can start with my bedroom. So
they don't want to go to your bedroom. They want to go to certain sites that they like to look at. And they've asked permission again. Dr. Yukio Amano has asked permission to come back with a group of people from IAEA. Is it in your interest?
Well, definitely. But if they want
But he hasn't been in invited.
So the point is that when they claim that they want to visit that site, they should at least justify it for us, that why they want to visit that. They should give a justification that we are also suspicious of the activities of the agencies. So
you're suspicious of the IAEA? The IAEA?
Oh, definitely. There is no confidentiality in the works of this agency.
You don't have confidence? Is that what you're
confidentiality
saying?
Confidentiality.
Oh, in other words, the information they have is not confidential.
Oh, they can leak it to everywhere. So the same way they've done it before. And so we should have justification. They cannot just cross their finger and say, well, okay, I want to visit this point. They should give us justification and notification.
They want to look at these sites.
They cite information that they got it from others, never relieving it, that information to us. If they don't relieve the information to us, it doesn't have any value for us.
So it would be sufficient to you if they would show you the information
exactly,
they have.
Yes.
And then you might allow them to come.
Oh, definitely.
If they show you the information they have about your activities, you will invite them to come.
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah. The other question that comes up is this meeting that's going to take place and a vote that's going to happen. Clearly, there are not going to be more sanctions because the Russians and the Chinese have said no. Russians said no. Chinese said they're obscene. It's a vote in the Security Council. There's also, to put on more sanctions, there is also a vote to express deep and increasing concern. And that seems to reflect a growing opinion.
Well, the growing opinion is not with the barometer of Security Council. In the agency itself, all the non-aligned movement is stated very openly, very clearly, that they are not happy with the accusation. They are not satisfied with the level of accusation. They consider Iranian effort a safe effort within the NPT. So if the number counts, I will say with confidence that the majority of countries in the world, they do not share the United States' position.
It's not just the United States, it's Western Europe as well.
Well, this is true, but the world is not the West and the rest. I mean, I want to say that if you're talking about the world opinion, we do have the world opinion with us, even if it is not translated in the decision of the Security Council.
Do you believe the world opinion is that it does not want to see Iran develop a nuclear weapon?
Including Iran itself.
Exactly. Including Iran does not want to see Iran.
Yeah.
So the question of world opinion is whether Iran has a program or not.
Exactly.
A clear, focused, ongoing program to develop a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
Was there a program that stopped in 2003?
No, this is absolutely not correct. We were happy to hear that because partially they conceded, the American intelligence report conceded that Iran does at least at this from that time on, doesn't continue that. But even before that, we never had that program. Well, I mean, our activity is so open. And,
it's not. And clearly, you know better than that. It's not open.
It's quite open.
It was hidden. And you acknowledge was hidden.
No, it was hidden. The problem was
there were aspects of the enrichment that was not disclosed, and it only came out because you finally acknowledged it to the surprise of.
No, the point was the difference between the reading the text. Whether we should, the moment that we put the fuel over there for the enrichment, we should get the agency to know, or the agency said no from moment number one that you decide to do that, we should inform us. We were of the belief that we are obliged to report to the agency unless we put the uranium in the centrifuge and ignite the whole system. Based on this idea, which a number of countries, they share this with us, that unless before that, we should not disclose, because before you charge the centrifuge, it is just a piece of metal over there. This is a difference in the semantic of that rule.
What would you recommend be done in order to show clearly that there is no program, yet you have a right, and the United States recognizes this, to develop enriched uranium for peaceful uses, including medical? How do you get past this distrust and the evidence that the IAEA says it has?
Well, the distrust is mutual from both sides, at least. I believe sincerely that the United States of America definitely knows that we are not after the weapon. This is my sincere belief. But, well, politically they say something else. Let us assume.
Fair enough.
Let us assume that they are suspicious of us and
exactly.
We are suspicious of them. Well, let us start to take this this incompetence little bit by little away, because confidence doesn't come wholly and overnight.
Right.
My equation is very simple. One step of transparency from Iran, one step of cooperation from the United States.
Okay, what would be a transparency from Iran, and what would be an example of cooperation from the United States?
I mean, there are plenty of modalities you can design. They cannot ask that everything should be, because transparency itself is gradual and it has a lot of meaning. Cooperation is also, it has a lot of meaning. The more we get confidence that nobody wants to deprive us from technological capability on the nuclear area, the more we'll be forthcoming. Mm-hmm. Because at this moment, whatever we hear is that why Iran has this technology at all.
But so you're acknowledging you have not been forthcoming.
Well, no, I don't say that forthcoming in the sense of United States, more than MPT. We think already we've done everything within MPT.
Non-proliferation treaty.
Exactly.
Okay, but let me stay with this in this way. There was at one time this idea that Iran could ship its uranium outside and other countries might enrich it and then send it back to you for medical uses. Is that idea, does it have any possibility of being resurrected?
Yes. In fact, this is a good example that you are looking for the cooperation,
right,
vis-a-vis the transparency. The whole idea was put by President Ahmadinejad because our fuel for the reactor
medical
in Tehran,
right,
which has plenty of uses,
right,
is going to finish. And 10 years ago, we bought it from Argentina. So there were several proposals. One, sell the fuel to us.
Sell enriched fuel to you.
Yeah,
right.
20% enriched fuel. If they are not ready to, they said, no, we are not going to sell it to you. Well, this is a very bad sign. I mean, this is not cooperation. Mm. They could sell it to us. Secondly, we said, okay, sell as much as...
Why did you need 20%? Is that what you thought 20% enriched was necessary rather than 5% enriched?
Oh, this reactor works with 20%.
Okay.
With a small amount, with 20% enriched. So the second proposal was, okay, sell as much as you want to us and let us... We ourselves enrich the rest of it. They said, no, you cannot enrich more than 5%.
Well, then there came the question of Britain and Brazil and Turkey.
Then the third proposal was, okay, sell as much as you want to us, and then let us swap. We give you 5% as much as needed, and you give us the 20%. Well, this was the swap idea, which was a good sign for cooperation. But all of a sudden, United States said, no, you should give all of your enriched one because we want to clean you up. The idea that if we have 5% uranium, then we are dirty and polluted, I think it's a very dirty idea by itself.
There has been an argument, I think, by Graham Allison, and I want to be clear about this, in which he suggested you look at this on a football field, and if on an American football field, and if you're advancing down the field, that Iran is about at the 30-yard line, and so it's already advanced 70 yards. It has 30 yards to go to have a nuclear program and on explosive devices, and you only have 30 to go. And that you can take 20% enriched and over a process of a couple of years, make it into weapon-grade material.
Well, this is not a good similarity. I mean, we are right now, if you ask in terms of real world in the field, we are 100% away from the military use. If you ask in terms of capability, hypothetically, is Iran capable to do that if he decides? Obviously, yes. Any country who has nuclear technology is capable of doing that. The, I mean, the Germans can do it in 2 months, the
Japanese
in less than a month, or others in
but
less.
But is that where you want to be, though? Do you want to be exactly where the Germans and the Japanese are?
We want to be beyond them, because this is capability.
Yeah. But you want to have the same capability that the Japanese and the Germans do.
It is a natural outcome. If you are advanced in this area of science, then you will acquire this capability.
But that's an interesting question. I mean, you're saying, yes, we want to have the same capability that Japan and Germany has.
Well, beyond that, you want even want to get more sophisticated.
Then you want to have the capability that would allow you to, if you decided to take the additional step of making a nuclear device, happen within months. That's the capacity you would like to have.
So what? Should we be punished because we are advanced?
No.
He's like a man. He's very quite, he has a faculty of thinking. Then we say, okay, if you are strong in thinking, you may think in the wrong direction. So close out your thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is natural capacity of a nation. How we should be deprived of that? I mean, is there a limit for Iranian for advancement in science and technology?
So you basically say we want the capacity to make a nuclear weapon, even though we do not have a program to actually make the weapon. We just want the capacity, which is exactly
even
what the Japanese have.
That is not the correct wording.
What's the
correct
word?
Wording
the ability,
is that
the capacity, the materials?
We want advancement in science and technology related to nuclear area. Not directly toward the weaponry and armistice.
But you
things.
Want it to be at a level so that it does instantly.
It's
you
naturally
could turn
it comes. It's right. natural. If okay. you are advanced in building a good machine, then you can make another machine.
Yeah, but then the problem comes in the debate, because there's a great fear of Iran having a nuclear weapon, as you say, as you know, because it will destabilize the region and many other reasons that's expressed, and it violates the NPT and all of that. And if Iran violates the NPT, so will other countries, as you well know. They worry about that. Do you worry about that?
Oh, not at all.
You don't worry about
not
that?
Not at all, because, I mean, the instability in the region is not stemming from Iran. I mean, violating NPT also is not a big problem for the United States.
Would you like to see Saudi Arabia have a nuclear weapon? Would you like to see
nuclear weapon or nuclear technology? Two things.
Okay, fair. Nuclear weapon. Would you like to see Saudi Arabia?
We are a signator to NPT. We are a sincere signator to NPT. We think the non-proliferation is a benefit of Iran and all of us.
Would you like to see Saudi Arabia have the same kind of capability to produce a nuclear weapon that you say the capability?
Well,
if you decide to go that last distance.
We are an advocate of Middle East free of nuclear weapon. But in terms of developing nuclear technology for all other peaceful uses, we are even ready to share with them our capability. No
all
problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
How close are you, if you wanted to today, to produce a nuclear weapon, an explosive device? How close are you if, in fact, you made that decision?
Well, professionally, I cannot answer that rigorously. Only thing, because it depends on a lot of points. But I tell you personally that to build a bomb is not a big deal, I mean, from the technological point of view.
Well, having the material to build a bomb is a big deal. Otherwise, you wouldn't be engaged in this.
I mean, you see, Pakistan already has a bomb, but their technology is far behind of us. In a nuclear sense, mm-hmm. and to build a bomb through plutonium, they use a CANDU type reactor. Right. But we think the area of science and technology in this area is so interesting, and I mean, why we need a weapon at all? We are so strong in the region. You are capable to deter any imminent threat. Why we need an atomic bomb? It is.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, we don't need it.
Okay.
We don't.
But you
need
do
it.
Need the capacity to do it. You've just said that.
No, the capacity is natural. When you get strong, you can lift a heavy weight. I mean, this is obvious.
Exactly. I hear you, and I hear you clearly.
Yeah.
There is a report that the sanctions are having an impact on Iran. The cost of food is up. Inflation is up. It is having a serious impact on the people of Iran. the food that they want to buy cost a lot more because of these sanctions.
Well, even if this is true.
It is true, isn't it? Your own central banker said that. Well,
suppose this is
Bahmani.
True. Why United States will be interested in putting pressure on our people? Why the language of threat is so interesting?
Because they believe that you have this.
I don't think so. I think they know that our technology is not toward that. I think their wariness is from somewhere else.
And what is that worry, you think?
And this is coming from the whole Middle East area. American policy in Middle East is stumbling, is falling apart, while their strategic allies are collapsing one after another. They are afraid that Iran is going for fishing in this area. Iran is gaining.
Okay, Syria. You're supporting the government of Bashar Assad, correct?
Well, this is very incorrect reading of our position. We are supporting the movement of the Middle East people toward democracy from day number one anywhere in the Middle East.
And how would you describe the movement in Syria?
Exactly.
How would you describe it? Is it a movement for democracy?
Oh, definitely.
And is it being put down by the Syrian army?
No, the whole complication of the problem is here, that we are against imposing, infiltrating, and invigorating violence in all of these countries. Unfortunately, in Syria, in Yemen, in Bahrain, there is a tendency, which from United States and its allies, to invigorate violence and incite violence inside. The violence will definitely radicalize these movements.
Now, by that definition, do you mean supporting the rebels in Libya, which overthrew the government of Colonel Gaddafi? Is that inciting violence?
No, support is one thing, but to enter in military interference is another one.
Okay, but look what I'm asking, a specific case. Libya, for an example. Was that the wrong policy? To support the rebels and prevent, in the beginning, a massacre in Benghazi?
Well, the number of people has been killed, even with the NATO support, may equal the same way if we let the people themselves. Because later, it was the rebels who won. If NATO did not enter this game, I think the rebels were victorious as well.
Well, no, they're not so sure.
Well,
they're not so sure about that.
Well,
the rebels.
Well, you see, if the rebels, if you read them right now, definitely they are happy that somebody helped them.
Exactly.
But they are not happy with the way that they were being helped.
They asked for the help.
So they did not ask for the NATOs to just come there and spread his wings over there.
They clearly asked for the support that they got, and they've expressed great appreciation for it. Well, because it enabled them to overthrow what they consider to be,
gave any speed to the movement, but definitely the movement in these states should go by itself.
Here's my question, and this is for debate, you and I have a dialogue about this. The Arab Spring was not about Iran. It was not about the United States. It was not even about Israel. It was about a rising of people in an argument for dignity, in an argument for freedom, in an argument to change a government. Clearly, you agree with that? It wasn't about the United States. It wasn't about Israel. It was not about Iran. It was about their own aspirations from Tunisia to Egypt to Syria to Libya.
Well, let's take Egypt.
Let's take Egypt.
Well, the first thing that the people of Egypt, they asked for it, to close the embassy of Israel and to cut the export of gas to that. So the opposition to the policies of previous regime with Israel was very prominent. Secondly,
misread the point, I think, with respect. The protest that began in Tahrir Square was not about Israel. It really wasn't. I was there. It was about a yearning for dignity and a yearning for freedom and a yearning to control their own destiny and to change a government that was receptive to that.
Well, you see, it is true when you say it is not about I mean, this is, we need a semantical elucidation. Yeah. How you can one detach when the movement, and even in the first day of it, it has showing sentiment against the foreign imposition about the relation with Israel. I think at least we can say this movement, which is for the participation people in the political structure, right. They have very strong desire to change the policy with the Israel, even to change the way of relation which the previous regime had with the United States.
Agreed. There is conventional wisdom says that there will be a different relationship with Israel, and even a different kind of relationship with the United States than the previous regime had.
And a different kind of relationship with Iran as well.
Exactly. Yeah. But here's another conventional wisdom, that Iran is worse off because of that, because it was not about them. These were not the same kind of revolution that Iran had. And in very much, they said they did not want that kind of revolution.
Why somebody should expect that Iranians are thinking or they wanting that a similar model should be done over there? This is an experience. The Egyptian people, they should go through their own experience to create their own polity. But if somebody thinks that this trend will be anti-Islamic, this is absolutely wrong.
I don't think anybody thinks that at all. I mean, I think that there's a sense of pro-Islamic. It's just that it will not be...
That's good enough.
It will not be... Exactly.
That's good enough.
It will not be pro-Iran, and you're saying you don't want it to be pro-Iran, you don't want it to be pro...
What do you mean? I mean, the meaning of pro is different from point of view of United States and Iran. Pro-United States means they should be under the influence of United States. Pro-Iran means we will be friends together. You learn from our experience, we learn from your experience. So it's quite different meaning.
Right. Agreed. I mean, I agree with that. But how do you see the way these governments will be forming in terms of whether it's Egypt or looking at what happened in Tunisia, you know, in terms, what does this mean with respect to Islam?
I think at least the minimum thing that Islam is revising itself. It's coming to the life much more than before. Islam is revived in the social life. So we are very happy to see it in Tunisia. Muslim Brotherhood is gaining. We are not after they copy our way of governance, but it's obvious the Islamic sentiment is coming up. I mean, just look to the collective prayers, mosques, the women's hijab, Jum'ah prayer, the sentiments. Well, this is what we want to see. This is what we think it is a good gain for our ideas. You want to see the Egyptian people start their experience of building a society based on their culture, their experience. We do not think that models from Iran or Turkey or other places will work. But we are very much happy of the development in the region. And in Syria especially, we passed this issue. Syria, United States should not look after imposing somebody in Syria.
They're not imposing anyone.
Look.
They didn't impose anyone in Libya.
You see, they kicked Syria out of the Arab League. Countries who, their record in democracy is dismal. How they say that we are so worried about democracy in Syria, how we can read that? Obviously, this is not the case for the movement of people.
You know, I mean, there seems to be, and this is a Western impression, this person, that there was some difference between your president's response to Syria and your supreme leader.
Well,
difference in nuance. Am I right?
No. I think the whole issue is something inside Syria. You see, in Syria, if the movement gets along, I think United States won't be happy. Because over there, the Muslim Brotherhood is very strong. They are good.
In Syria. The United States has expressed its desire, I think, and made clear they would like to see the Assad government go. And so have many other countries and that surround Syria. But your government has not. Your government is one government that has not expressed a desire to see the Assad government.
Is the United States happy if a government comes in Syria again after Bashar Assad which is a very good supporter of Islamic Jihad and Hamas, like we are, for example? Definitely not.
No, I probably would agree with that. I mean, I think that's the point. They would not be happy with a government that is supportive of Hamas or Hezbollah.
So,
they would not,
I want to get a conclusion that what United States...
But I don't speak for the government. I'm just telling you my impression of the government.
I think in my evaluation that the United States is looking to extract concession from Bashar Assad rather than to topple him.
Oh, I don't think so. But that we can't settle that either. Let me just go back. Speak frankly about the economic circumstance of Iran today. Okay?
Okay.
How bad is it?
Well, you see, economic situation in Iran is not worse than United States' economic situation. But, I mean, if you're asking me whether the...
Your inflation is at 19%.
Well, this
inflation
is not...
Inflation is at 19%.
Well, it is not as strange in Iran and countries around us. If you're talking, if you want to get the answer to this question, whether these sanctions hurt Iran's economy, yes, it has its effect.
Right, right.
It's obvious. But if you think that this will bring our economy down, definitely not.
Well,
definitely not.
Do you fear an attack by the Israelis?
Not at all.
You don't fear it? Do you believe it might come?
We don't believe it, but we are ready for it.
And what would you do if it comes?
Oh, we are very strong in defending ourselves.
What would you do?
Well, it is very hard to say it right now.
Would it put America at risk, even if it did not know?
Well, this is something that couldn't be said to anybody. I mean, does United States and Israel, could we separate them?
Well, but there was even a report this week that suggested the
Israeli... I cannot swallow this idea that Israel acts in the region and the United States is aware of. It is a humiliation for the United States and a staunch supporter, carte blanche support for Israel all the way, and Israel doing something so strange for the American interests without permission. I cannot swallow that, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, there was a report this week that said Israel would not necessarily come, it would act on its own, it would not necessarily consult with the United States on the, on its own actions vis-a-vis Iran.
Well, the interesting point for me is that why this warmongering literature is so interesting for the Western communities. Why they are so much playing on that, threatening everything on the table, war, attacking.
But no, they're also interested in Iran's support of certain militia groups in Iraq that are attacking American, that attacked American soldiers, where you gave them the mines that came and were attacking Americans came from Iran.
Well, I think
they were interested in that, and that's an aggressive action by Iran.
Well, United States knows that American military in Iraq and Afghanistan was attacked by Al Qaeda. Their money is coming from
Al Qaeda. Al Qaeda is not the issue in Iraq, as you know.
Oh no, definitely, as they have a very strong activity over there. I think money is
we're talking about other militia groups that you were supporting, not Al Qaeda, but other militia groups you were supporting.
We are
with these.
Our support,
weapons.
As you know, our support is solid for the Maliki's government. We are not doing anything to undermine this government.
It's a government that you like.
Well, it is a government that the Iraqi people like.
Yeah. There is also this idea, which I'd be happy to have you express an opinion. That government is not in any way under the influence of Iran. Because some people feared that government would be under your influence, and they feel very strong and proud about that, that they are in fact not under Iranian influence at all.
This is absolutely true.
Okay.
I mean, this mentality that if you have good relations with another country or you have some mutual influence, then you are under the influence. This is the mentality of omnipotence, which is propagated by United States and these countries in the area. But we have fantastic relation with them. They are not the stooges of Iranian. We don't want any subordinate government over there. Our interest doesn't lie on that modality of relation.
What is your interest in the region?
Oh, let the foreigners to go and let democracy flourish in the region.
Right. two more areas I want to cover with you, if I may. One is this, the idea.
I mean, the whole source of instability and tension in our region is stemming from two springheads. One is Israel, the other United States adventures in the area.
The reason that these countries have experienced a revolution is not because of the relationship of those rulers with the United States. It was because of overall policies of those rulers and its own impact on their own sense of freedom and dignity.
Well, let us make it like this. Well, the primary source of the incentive for this movement is the dictatorship which was over there. So the people wants to have a more democratic structure. This is obvious.
Exactly.
But there are other things which definitely help the people to pour out. Their discontent with the American policy in these countries, their strong discontent for American support for Israel, for discontent and humiliation in front of the Israel. So all of this definitely is helping the people to move out more fast. Even it will has an effect on their slogans. Even it has an effect on their path that they are going through. It is very important to notice that these movements will move in a in an environment which is not detached from the environment. It has quite interaction with the environment. So these are the basic parameters of the environment, how we can ignore them.
Let me just make one point with respect to bombing the sites. The Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, said that a strike on Iran would have a serious impact on the Middle East and American forces in the region without seriously disrupting your own nuclear program. That came from the Secretary of Defense, suggested that people ought to think very carefully on any strike against Iran.
Well,
and,
I think
that stands on its own, does it not?
Well, I think the second part is definitely is correct.
Okay.
I mean, our capacity or capability in nuclear technology is not something that can be taken away from us. If Bushehr power plant is hit, we can build another one. If two scientists are assassinated, there are 10 others is coming. So
the fact that your nuclear scientists have been assassinated.
Yeah.
Okay. With respect to speaking of those kinds of things, there was, as you know, much controversy about a plot to kill the Saudi ambassador to the United States. What can you tell us about that?
I can tell you that categorically, this is very unfounded, number one. Second, we did not get any information from the United States. We already asked them, please tell us some information that we can even help you, who the hell these people were in doing that. No single piece of information. Even the identity of people they claim in here, they have dual citizenship.
Well, they had made trips to Tehran, had they not, one of them?
Well, we don't know. It's even the identity of that person is not totally known to us. So, United States, we think, wants to create another sphere of tension against Iran. Otherwise, you should give us some information. Neither the Saudis nor the Americans, they gave us a piece of information. I'm afraid our Saudi brothers are themselves victim of another plot, which to make their relation to incite tension with Iran. Otherwise, we don't understand that such a thing could happen, and Iran is not informed, even not given any piece of information. We have serious doubts about the authenticity of the whole game which have been given there, while the government is totally away from this kind of activity.
The United States Attorney General, Mr. Holder, said he took it seriously.
Well, it is up to the Americans to take it seriously or not, but from our point of view, we don't have the slightest idea that what the whole thing is about. The slightest idea. They did not give us a single piece of information. What we got is from internet. I mean, this is what in this internet is available. This is as much as we have.
One last question.
And we asked We ask that clearly from the United States that give us information, even we can help you to identify if there is somebody doing that.
And they've given you no information?
Not at all. No information.
How would they? How does the United States communicate with your government?
Oh, very simple. I mean, our
ambassador to the UN?
UN and also the ambassador of Swiss in Tehran and our...
So there is communication back and forth.
Fantastic
yeah. communication.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic, but yeah. it's moving.
What's going on with Mr. Ahmadinejad, your president, and his relationship with your supreme leader, who you advise?
Well, Ahmadinejad is a... You know, I was a staunch supporter of Ahmadinejad.
Was?
I was, yes. While he's finishing his term, I think he should finish his term with dignity. When the president gets to the last year, then everybody's attention will move to another issue.
This is different than that, you know. I mean, they clearly, it had to do with appointment of ministers and who was going to be fired and who was not going to be fired. It was an embarrassment to your president.
This is obvious that a minister is not a personal secretary. So to change a minister, even in the United States, takes 2 months. So it is true in Iran. I mean, in Iran, right. Power is shared. Nobody is omnipotent.
Supreme leaders.
Even no, definitely. I mean, everybody has his share in the constitution. So I think I'm not disturbed about this thing. I think Ahmadinejad is doing well.
You do?
You think he's
doing well? Does the supreme leader think he's doing well?
Well, obviously, in general, he's doing well.
Otherwise, he wouldn't be there? Because there was even a talk that he might be impeached at some point.
Well, we have a strong parliament. Obviously, they put finger in
Your brother is the speaker of the parliament.
It is true. So, the strong parliament is good. I mean, check and balance is needed in our society. Yeah. You know, for the first time, a minister was summoned to the parliament, and he apologized in front of the nation. He said, well, I did a mistake. Please forgive me. If you want to take me away, take it. Otherwise, I want to correct. I mean, this is fantastic reward from democracy.
All right. Aren't there criminal charges against one of the close advisors to your president?
No, well, there are charges about them for
having to do
financial
with fraud.
Things.
Yes.
But not criminal charge in the sense of being inside the...
With fraud and corruption, was it not?
Yeah, yes. Well, it's not...
That can be criminal.
Connect. Well,
people here in the United States go to prison, and in China they go to prison for those kind of corruption.
They go to prison in Iran as well.
Okay, so that's
criminal. I thought that you mean indulging in some subversive activity against...
These are very close. This is a very close associate of the president.
Well, the charge is not right now, proven in the court. Yes, it has been heard about them. The judiciary is following that.
Was this his chief of staff?
Chief of staff, another one is Mr. Baghai, is also a deputy.
These are people pretty close to the president.
Pretty close to the... And I hope they will be cleared up. I mean...
You hope that they will be found innocent?
Yeah.
You do?
Yes.
You're a conservative?
I'm a conservative, yes.
And what is President Ahmadinejad?
Well, he's from our flank of political wing. I
mean. And how would you characterize Mr. Mousavi?
Well, Mousavi was a radical in the 10, 15 years of beginning of revolution.
When we radical were the, meaning like you were radical or radical?
No, we were the moderates and they were radical.
So he was to the... Definitions are hard, you know.
Well, let me start...
He was more of an extremist than you were.
Quite different idea. On the economical area, they were advocating government control, and we were pro-private sector. Yeah. In the relation with the world, we were advocating good relation with even the Western countries. They were totally against the open relation with the world. So this, we call him radical. We were the moderate.
Okay, but I'm going to go back to Mr. Ahmadinejad. Tell me the relationship he has with the Supreme Leader.
I think it's a good working relation.
Do you really?
Yes. That's a good working relation. You know, in the Western community...
No, we're asking, so we have dog in this...
No, I want to say that the expectation is that the government in the Middle East should be like the emperor and kings. There should be an order, everything should be obeyed. This is not true. We have a system.
In the United States, the president is the commander-in-chief. But in Iran, the president is not the commander-in-chief of the armed. National security and defense policy come within the purview of the supreme leader. You know that better than I do.
Well, as I said, the power is shared over there, but the whole executive branch is under the president.
All the government,
all the ministries.
Of course, but
all the money, everything. So they have a strong.
If there was a conflict between the president and the supreme leader, who would win?
Well, we have a system over there. We designed to avoid filibustering. We have the Council of Expediency. It goes there. They will give a report, and then it will be decided. Yes, I mean,
you've got a parliamentary election coming up.
Yeah, it's coming up. It is fantastic and very hot election.
Really? And are you worried that your side may lose?
Well, let me reveal my heart. Yes, I'm a bit worried that we lose the majority that we are. We are holding about 160. Seats from 290, which is a good majority. I will be very happy to keep this number in next election.
So you're losing favor with the people of Iran.
Well, Iranian flavor is very complicated to discover, even for us who are politicians
inside. Can I raise a serious issue, which is I raise it every time with you and with others too, because it is felt so deeply here. It is the question of human rights. There is, questions of Abdul Fattah Soltani and others, what happened at the time of the protest. There are people that are in prison that many people outside of Iran believe are political prisoners. I don't have to go through chapter and verse. Why do you do it?
Well, yeah, I mean, protest is protest. I mean, if a country doesn't have
protest.
Well,
that's one thing, but putting people in fear of their life is something else, especially if you have the power of the government.
Well, I mean, if they incite to violence, definitely they will be followed by law. And they should obey the law even if they want to do the protest. And this is the key issues, key issue in here, I mean.
But Mr. Mousavi and Mr. Karoubi are under a virtual house arrest, are they not?
Well,
ran for one mayor and one president of the country.
Well,
they're under house arrest.
This is a sad story that these two politicians, in their normal political activity, at one moment they decided to ask the people to do violence. And this is a great mistake of these two close friends of mine.
Yeah.
But they committed a mistake. They, in democracy.
So you said they were close friends of yours.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We worked together for years. So if you don't agree with the result of the polling, you cannot decide that in the middle of the street. This is
so the great crime, as you see it, that
mistake,
they committed was to say the election was unfair and call on their people to be into the streets
exactly.
To protest it.
No.
What's wrong with the idea of protesting in the streets and election?
The protest is not wrong, as I said. But to ask them to do violence, to ask them not to go to home unless the whole thing is toppled, we told them very frankly that, look, election is election. Sometimes one side is not content with it. There are legal mechanisms. No law is perfect, but in democracy, even if you don't agree with it, even I cited the example of George Bush's first election. I said, look, in United States, for 2 months, the result of election was not
unclear.
Unclear.
Right. But finally settled by the Supreme Court.
But Supreme Court, and Al Gore came to, he was not happy. He was considering himself a real winner.
But people who protested that election were not put in jail.
No.
They were not tortured.
The reason was, no, torture is another. I mean,
fair enough.
Like,
it's another issue. Yeah. But those allegations are there as well,
did not ask the people to come to the street, burn the banks, and close windows.
Mousavi asked them to to burn banks?
Well, he incited the violence, fully fledged. He never asked his people not to do it. Why not legal system?
Why is Mr. Soltani in prison?
Fattah Soltani?
Yes.
Well, this is the court. He got an indictment in the court. exactly with the same argument that I said. He was involved in incitement against violence against the security of the state. Well, he's a good lawyer. I mean, I respect for him very much, but I do not agree with what he did. But the indictment of the court is another thing. I'm not going to say that if I was a judge, I was ruling the same. This is another issue.
Now, I'm going to quote this to you, and we'll turn to one final subject. Ahmed Shahid, the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in Iran, filed his first report to the General Assembly, UN General Assembly, revealing a pattern of systemic violations of fundamental human rights in Iran.
Well,
systemic violations of fundamental human rights.
Well, Ahmed Shahid rushed to a kind of copy and paste report. He never did any study. I mean, allegation about Iran is 1,000 of that or 200,000 of that. You can produce it in the virtual space very easily. What kind of investigation is done? None. So we copy and paste the previous reports. Unfortunately, he get a very bad mark professionally in producing this report. He is open to do professional report. But this is not professional report. This is good for making this resolution against us, which is pushed by United States, more sound. This is only for that use. It doesn't have a single value in terms of professionality.
Will your brother run for president?
I'm encouraging him. This I can say.
Yeah. Family sticks together, do they?
Well, it is not only a family story. I consider him very competent.
And how will Iran be different if he's the president?
Well, I think he can. Well, each president brought a contribution to Iran's development. I think his slogan will be more efficiency, more moderation.
Moderation,
yes.
And the other brother is what now?
He's the head of judiciary, Ayatollah Amuli.
Isn't this too much power in one family?
Well, I think this is not the power which is coming from the family ancestry. This is the confidence of the people. They can take it away anytime they want. I was for years member of the parliament.
I know you were.
And they decided not to be the people.
Yeah.
I just kissed their decision and said, okay, I will do my service in another job.
If I came to Iran, could I interview anybody that I wanted to?
Oh, definitely.
Mr. Mousavi, Mr. Karoubi.
Yeah. Why not?
Supreme Leader.
Everybody.
You'll help me interview the Supreme Leader?
Obviously. You're welcome. Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to have you in the broadcast again.
Okay.